Congratulations. You've made an excellent life choice today. You're displaying strong character and good taste in tuning into this infotainment web zone. We're poorly informed, highly opinionated, and hold no topic off limits. This is Idiots Discuss the Universe. Show. I'm Craig and this is Spencer.
Hello.
And we got a pretty nice show for you today. We're going to do a couple things. First, we're going to talk about everybody's, well, I don't know about everybody's, but my new favorite element, thorium.
Ooh.
And the supposed thorium conspiracy. We'll decide if there's anything to that.
You
or not.
Know I'm down to talk about that.
Yeah. I thought Spencer would especially like it, but we're going to talk a little bit about that, get a little science going in on the Idiots Discuss the Universe. And then after that, we're going to have a special segment that we call Black Watch Plaid.
Black Watch Plaid.
Where we take some existential threat to our existence and we give it a once-over, idiot style. And that's all we got for you today, but that's all we need for you today.
Should we explain the origin of Black Watch Plaid as far as where we got it from?
Harvey Birdman, attorney at law.
Right. Yeah. It's essentially the color of a threat level, and it's the threat level past orange and red and yellow. We raise it to Black Watch Plaid, meaning that is the ultimate threat level, the highest it can get.
Well. On our show, it is. Not on Harvey Birdman. Birdman, the highest level, was the cover of Rush's Moving Pictures album.
That's right.
Yeah. We don't quite get to that Harvey Birdman level yet, but Black Watch Plaid is the highest our alert level goes. And I think after we discuss the topic today, you'll see that that's plenty high. Black Watch Plaid is pretty much as high as any man cares to handle.
As high as any man should go.
Right. You don't want to get into Rush territory.
No.
All righty. So let's get started.
Thorium. I have no idea.
Yeah. You have no idea.
Not really. I've got the Wikipedia page here in front of me.
Right.
And so I see that it's a radioactive metallic chemical element with the symbol TH and the atomic number 90.
Two down from uranium, our favorite radioactive element, humanity's favorite.
That is the star of the radioactive elements, uranium.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the history of thorium. I mean, thorium obviously has a much longer history, but let's talk about the human's history with thorium. Mm. A Norwegian amateur geologist, Morten Thun Ismark. I may be saying that wildly wrong. I have no idea. But
sounds Norwegian. Definitely.
He discovered it in 1828 and named it after Thor, the god of thunder.
Oh,
thus
cool.
Thorium. It just kind of was discovered then, you know, and it just kind of hung out for a while. Like, it didn't really, you know, I mean, it was used for a couple things. Nothing super groundbreaking. It was used for this thing called a gas mantle, which was like a hand lantern that the military would use, and it would be the substance that would make the light. You know, I'm not really sure exactly how that worked.
Interesting.
Kind of a type of candle.
They would ignite it, kind of.
Yeah, I guess. I didn't really look into that too much. I mean, I saw a couple pictures of what it looked like, and it looks like a little hand lantern. And I'm not really sure about the chemistry about how that worked. But thorium was part of the active thing that lit, or it was part of how they built the material that held the light, maybe? I don't know.
So this is right around, is this the Industrial Revolution? Is that in full swing at
this
point?
Civil War period sometime.
Okay.
You know, mid-19th century probably is when the gas mantle was being used. I think that's the period. Then.
Gotcha.
And then it kind of had a little bit of an explosion at the very end of the 19th century. It was discovered to be radioactive
Man, I feel bad for all those soldiers walking around who did not know it's radioactivity beforehand.
Exactly. I mean, luckily they were going to die of the gangrene way before radioactivity had anything. Yeah. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would have think that that can't be good for you. You know. But again, rough. We all have our cell phones and we're carrying those around too.
Right.
But it's the second radioactive element discovered.
What was the first?
I think uranium.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think uranium. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of hung out again, you know. They didn't really have any, they knew it was radioactive, but they didn't really have much application for any of that information at that point. The scientific curiosity was piqued, though, and it started to appear in all sorts of quack health products up until, like, the 1920s.
Really?
Like, in just, you name it, it was included.
Like a tonic? A tincture?
Tinctures, whoa. Just snake oils of all variety would use thorium as one of its, you know, active ingredients, I guess, which is just essentially radiation. But anyway, 1920s, quack cures, and then they cracked down quack cures at some point, and it just kind of
once they figured out it was radioactive.
No, that was after. That was the selling point, the radioactivity.
What?
People didn't understand, really, I don't think, what radioactivity meant, you know, and they thought, well, you know, maybe that's something that's good for me, you know, like, we'll get some of that on there, you know, or whatever. You know, I think that, you know, with quack medicine, it's just like, oh, I hear that in scientific, you know, that sounds scientific, and maybe it'll work for my, in this ointment.
It'll do something.
It'll do something, and it did do something, I think.
They weren't wrong.
Right. And there it sat for a little while. Then we don't really hear much about it until the development of radioactive technology during World War II.
Like, what was the guy's name? Project Manhattan, Einstein?
Oppenheimer.
Were they messing around with thorium?
Thorium, I'm sure, was one of the elements that they considered using.
Okay.
It's the easiest of the radioactive elements to find. I mean, it's a byproduct of the mining of a lot of, what do they call the elements that they use for cell phones? Conflict minerals, but rare earth.
Oh, rare earth metals.
Rare earth metals.
Yeah.
Thorium is a byproduct. A lot of the discarded material is thorium.
Interesting.
And the United States has thorium in abundance, especially in Idaho. It's less expensive to extract than uranium. It's more powerful than uranium. Has a no fissile isotope, which means that when uranium can be turned into plutonium, and plutonium can be weaponized.
I see.
Right.
Just by changing one of the isotopes or adding a molecule or
it's just a way that when you hit a uranium. Okay, this is an idiot. This is where the idiot part kicks in.
We covered that part, you know.
When you hit a uranium-235 atom with whatever, and you're splitting that, it'll break down into plutonium and several other radioactive elements. And the plutonium can then be weaponized. And the same thing, you break down thorium, but thorium breaks down into different radioactive materials.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between those two are that thorium's radioactive elements are more benign in the sense that their half-life is, I mean, they're dangerous for about 500 years after they're produced, where nuclear materials are dangerous for a long time, 50,000 years or something. It's considerably longer. But the U.S. government decided to go with uranium in World War II because they were not looking for a power source so much as they were looking for a weapon.
Right.
And thorium got kind of pushed to the wayside.
Interesting. So you think that it sounds just off the bat from what little you've said so far that thorium would be ideal for the sort of nuclear power situation that people are looking for, or that people, I don't know, I guess a certain demographic of people are in support of because it's more abundant and it's less radioactive or less harmful?
Well, it's more more powerful. It's weird because I don't know if that makes it more radioactive or not, but the waste from it is definitely dangerous for a lot less time.
Gotcha.
Right. I mean it's kind of a moot point for us because both of them are going to be deadly until we die, no matter what, you know. But 500 years is way different ball game than 50,000 years.
Right.
There are a few drawbacks to thorium that are continually brought up, and these seem weird to me. They don't seem as unsurmountable as a lot of the people bringing them up like to emphasize that they are. And right. I guess maybe I don't quite understand all of the pieces and how they move together. Uranium, from what I understand, is like to refine uranium into something that you can use as fuel is a process, like a 15-part process where you have to enrich. I mean, all sorts of things have to go into and resources and all of that have to go into making uranium into something that we can use. Yet, one of the critiques of thorium is that it also has to go through a huge amount of preparation before you can create the thorium fuel pellets that like a reactor would use. Mm-hmm. So I don't really see what the difference is between the two in the sense that they're both difficult things to do. I guess that we already have the means of production to turn uranium into fuel in place, and that makes it easier. Okay. Because thorium is an undeveloped resource. So in that sense, it is easier.
It says here that the earliest thorium-based reactor was built in the U.S. in 1962.
Well, there's that Oak, I don't know if it's called Oak Island or Grand Oaks or something like that. That's the Grand Oaks Laboratory. And they did do a thorium. They were interested in trying to do thorium as an energy source, and they commissioned some scientists to build a reactor. And that's another huge benefit of thorium is the fact that it doesn't suffer meltdowns in the same way that a uranium power plant does. Like it doesn't have the threat of a meltdown. It can be that the reaction can be immediately turned off. And in that way, it's just phenomenally safer than any of the nuclear power plants that we have that are going under uranium.
Yeah, I always thought that the looming meltdown was like the biggest detractor of nuclear power.
Absolutely. That's the thing that's the huge fear. It's kind of an odd thing. I mean, Chernobyl was horrible, and right. I mean, there obviously have been some major disasters. But I would argue that our other forms of energy production are equally harmful to the Earth.
Maybe not so sensational, or in their harmfulness, like
concentrated, maybe right. But I would say that like the oil spill in the Gulf was pretty bad. I think that there's been some oil spills up in the Arctic that if we really got a good look at what was going on up there, that would have been real bad.
Sure.
So I mean, the arguments to be made that they're both pretty dangerous things to be dealing with. But thorium seems to and that brings me back to this research that you're talking about in 1962 that went all the way up into 1973, where they built a reactor that passed all of the initial tests that they were looking for. They had developed something called a molten salt reactor, which is something that makes people super excited in this field. I mean, just the name alone is exciting.
My
God. Just like shaking excitement about the molten salt reactor.
It sounds like an evil genius, Dr. Evil kind of idea. Molten salt reactor. I mean, what does that even...
Well, most uranium is cooled with water, right? They have the rods, and the rods are in the water. And then the nuclear power plants, if you've ever seen one, they release steam out the top of the big old silos.
Good old healthy steam.
Right. Yeah, but actually it is just water vapor that they're releasing out the top. Absolutely. It's not just just water vapor.
Okay.
Unless things go bad, and then it's full of some other stuff.
I see. Turns green.
I mean, if you're seeing it like come out and it's bad, then it's probably, you know, it's
time to go.
It's time to go, probably for good. You know, it doesn't matter how far you run at that point. They're cooled with water, and water has a tendency to build up pressure and explode. Whereas molten salt is something that is self-contained.
Liquefied salt.
It totally absorbs heat. It tends to self-correct itself when it gets too hot. It's something that if it needs to be, it can be totally drained down into the, I don't understand, again, all the parts of it, but it really seemed like it solved all of the problems of a potential meltdown, a molten salt reactor using thorium.
Yeah.
One of the detractors of thorium is that a thorium reaction cannot get started on its own. You have to use uranium or plutonium to strike the match.
Okay, so they're still involved.
And that's one thing that people will come out, you're still going to be using plutonium and uranium to get all these things started, so it's kind of a wash. You know, that's kind of one of the arguments. But what they don't say is that the thorium reactor will totally absorb whatever plutonium or uranium that's used to start the reaction, and there will be no waste from that material at all due to the nature of the thorium reactor. So that's reasonably
an improvement.
So I guess that the question is, like, why are we not going full force into thorium?
Well, it seems here, just in this Wikipedia article, that India has been going
absolutely
pretty full bore. Apparently, they have the largest stores in the world, or the largest supply of thorium in the world. And they do have a massive population to power.
Yeah.
So that's interesting as far as the implications for, you know, third world power.
And they're building like 13 or 14... plants, I want to say. I mean, they want to power, there's a large percentage of their total power they want to get from thorium in the next 10 years. It's a pretty aggressive, from what I remember hearing, it's either India or China, maybe I've got them confused, but a pretty aggressive goals as far as their putting the thorium into practice.
It definitely seems like it's India, as far as they have 846,000 tons in reserve, and these are the lower bound estimates.
Does it say how many plants they're planning on building? Oh, here, I wrote it down, actually. Here we go.
Oh, there you go.
30% by 2050. They want to do 30% of their total power from thorium. Yeah.
Wow.
China has started major research into thorium. And I guess Germany and England are also getting going. And I guess the U.S. is...
Oh, check this out. Sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
I guess this kind of goes back to the original thing. But apparently, so natural thorium decays very slowly compared to many other radioactive materials. And I don't know what that means with the half-life. That's just what this says. But I think it's the decay... the quick decay that actually makes something more radioactive, because that means it will break down quicker into the surrounding environment.
I think so. Yeah.
So they're saying it decays much slower than other radioactive materials such as plutonium and uranium.
Okay.
And the emitted alpha radiation cannot penetrate human skin, which is why handling small amounts of thorium, such as in gas mantles, is considered safe. Safe is in air quotes.
Right.
You know.
But safer than if it were plutonium.
Right. In which case you'd be throwing up like the next day or something.
Right.
Something like that.
Dead relatively quickly.
Yeah.
Huh.
So that's kind of interesting. And it's apparently odorless and tasteless, which chemicals that are odorless and tasteless always freak me out.
Radon freaks me out, especially when I live in the layer down here. Yeah. That's the odorless basement gas.
Because, I mean, that's what your nose is for, is for
detecting. I think that's what that is, though. I think that's a radar detector.
Oh, yeah?
So.
It looks like a smoke.
Yeah, it's something. Huh. It detects something.
It detects something. Hopefully it's doing its job. So if I'm on
fire, it's going to protect me from either I got to worry about fire or radon, whatever. The other one I don't have to worry about. I don't know which it is, so I worry about everything.
So, I mean, it's interesting. I have a family friend who is an advocate for abolishing all nuclear power.
Huh.
He's actually an activist. Like, this is his job. I guess it was something that when I would talk to him, I would always just assume kind of that he was right and that he's done more he's done more research and has been more educated about the subject. Yeah. Because he has spent so much of his time trying to get the power plants shut down, specifically this one in California that I think he was actually successful in helping get shut down. But it was run poorly. It was having all these sort of problems. So I can understand a nuclear power plant that is not properly run.
Oh, absolutely.
Is a huge public threat. But, and it, I guess this is the thing that thorium could maybe come in and help out with. Like, if some of those threats were mitigated, say, with a safer element, I don't see why, like, it does seem like it could solve a lot of the world's energy problems.
Right. I mean, there's a guy that I listened to a couple of his presentations about it, and he claims that we have enough thorium to last mankind's total energy needs forever. I mean, forever. I mean, just, we have almost endless amounts. And that's a hard thing to ignore. I mean, cheap universal energy would change humanity's life for the better on levels we can't even imagine.
Right.
If we had just unlimited amounts of power. I mean, if we had enough power, we can suck the carbon out of the atmosphere and just
purify the air basically.
With big generators that just run off of thorium. That doesn't harm the environment, doesn't have any sort of carbon emission from a thorium plant. It seems weird. I'm afraid that this is the part of the podcast where we get kind of dark, because the only thing I can think of is the why we don't have thorium reactors everywhere is because there's no way to make a bomb out of it.
What?
That's the only reason.
That's why you think? I mean, I agree.
That's the only reason the government put money into uranium research is to be able to develop missiles.
Be able to weaponize it.
And the power was a side benefit, you know, a talking point that, you know, got them their missiles.
I mean, I guess I would see that maybe it's too efficient. You know, because it kind of goes to that Tesla Edison thing where Tesla's method of electricity was so efficient that it was hard to monetize. You know,
you mean, are you talking about the alternating current?
Yeah.
Or alternating current's been monetized. We use it all the time. I mean, that's what we pay for right now. Right. I mean, his big,
what about direct current?
Direct current was Edison.
Oh,
and Edison monetized both of those.
Oh, well, what was the thing where you can, like, basically plug a light bulb into the ground and...
Oh, well, that was something that coil. I don't know was ever
proven,
shown outside of the laboratory as to being something that... I mean, I believe that that's possible since we've seen a lot of evidence of that being possible. But he theorized that he could build a big tower and broadcast energy everywhere
through
and
the air.
You would just have it through the air.
Right. So right. that
was never brought to a point where it was patented, I think, but right. I don't know if it had like a prototype that really worked.
Okay, so I guess that doesn't apply, especially because with thorium, you would still have a central source of power that would, you know, be creating electricity and then sending that through wires rather than the air itself, because that would be hard to monetize, the air itself.
Right.
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 So I guess you still theoretically could monetize, like, you could easily monetize a thorium electricity power plant the same way that, you know, GE
Sure. I think, though, that the operating costs would be so low.
So they'd be making a ton of money then.
A ton of money.
So I guess
But once we get electric cars that run off of battery power and we can run them off of thorium rather than fossil fuels, that actually makes battery-powered electric cars start to become completely environmentally positive.
Interesting.
It is.
I think there's just like that public health concern, that image of a nuclear, anything nuclear and radioactive is like bad publicity.
I think that a lot of that is, of course, the bomb side of things. People aren't a big fan of that. Yeah. You know, the radiation and the meltdown thing isn't popular. I also think that with a little help from the petroleum industry kind of push things a little bit more negative when they actually are stacking things up on a scientific kind of way, you know, making sure that the right dudes are on the right panels
lining the right pockets.
Yeah,
lobbying.
I think more than a little bit of that goes on.
Sure.
And I also think that, well, one thing I heard is when they got shut down, when they came up with the liquid salt reactor, the molten salt reactor, that's when that project got shut down in 1973, is once they started to present that. Because the person that was in charge of their budget was the person that had developed the water cooling system for uranium plants. Mm-hmm. So he had a personal vested interest in not seeing his own technology being surpassed by this new technology. It was kind of this perfect storm of stuff, and it just got shut down, you know. And Nixon was really unpopular at that point and kind of tried to get a few points. Well, we at least shut down this part of the nuclear development that we're doing. You know, aren't we, you know, really making a step in the right direction? Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to make a deal with the Soviets or the Chinese and, you know, all that sort of stuff, kind of playing it. But it was kind of subverted, and it was said to be in several reports that it was completely unsuccessful, when if you look at the actual research, according to a lot of things that I saw, all the tests were exactly what they expected and performed above or beyond the parameters that you would expect from thorium.
Well, that's certainly interesting. That gives me a lot to think about, man. Yeah, so, I think it's just a PR issue.
It's a bomb issue. There's no way that the nuclear industry would have ever gotten off. It's not like petroleum where you can dig a hole and it comes bubbling up and you get something hot and you put it on there and boom. You know what I'm saying?
It lights on fire.
Yeah. It takes a lot of investment capital to get a nuclear program going. And that requires like a government interest on a level that we had during World War II, like a survival level government interest, you know, where this is something that maybe is going to save our asses. Let's put every resource we can possibly put toward it. If we had not had that circumstance, we would still not have even uranium-based nuclear power, I don't think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess I don't know if that's a positive or a negative. Get like a fifth of our energy from uranium in the United States.
Do we really? A fifth?
Yeah, a fifth. There's a bunch of them. They're really kind of, on a lot of ways, if they're run well, aside from the... you have to store their waste forever in Nevada in a hole in the ground.
Right. Better be
they're cleaner and better to be around than a petroleum refinery or a power plant. I grew up around the refineries, and that is not a healthy thing to grow up around.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not. And I don't know if uranium plant or a nuclear plant would have been better. I mean, not if it was like Love Canal, that wouldn't have been better, but like I think most of them are okay, you know. I don't know if most of that's probably not true. Most of them are probably just filthy, awful, death traps.
Who knows? Maybe.
But I think that if we got like a thorium in there, it could leak a little bit, be okay. You know, it'd be fine, right?
Yeah, it's just a little bit. It's fine. The fish might, you know, be a little feisty in the next few years in the river downstream.
Or the three eyes, or, you know, they're just all going to die. You know, it's just, I don't know.
All right.
But I think that, you know, I think it was the bomb that got us uranium power in the first place. But I think we're at a special spot now that, like, if we wake up and, well, it doesn't matter. I mean, India's going to wake up. If India wakes up and it's getting like 50% of its power from thorium and it's having no problems and China starts doing it, it doesn't matter. It's going to get, soon it's not going to matter what America's doing because these other places are just going to do what they're going to do.
Totally.
Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, we're going to take a short break and we're going to be back with our final segment, a little Black Watch Plaid.
Black Watch Plaid.
Are you getting to sleep okay at night? Don't have enough to worry about? That's where Black Watch Plaid comes in. But every time we hit Black Watch Plaid, we're going to come at you with a new topic that could just end it for everybody at any moment.
Because you don't have enough to worry about.
Today's topic, solar storms. These are massive energy ejections from the photosphere of the sun. Whoa. They happen all the time. I mean, like, literally, like, there's probably one going on right now.
Yeah, I thought I heard about one that was supposed to happen pretty soon.
Absolutely. We have a satellite that watches the sun all the time to make sure to see when they're heading toward us. And we do regularly get, like, small ones that'll fuck with airplanes or satellites or something, but pretty minor. But there are big ones. I mean, relatively regularly, but they just usually aren't aimed at our planet. The last big one that hit was 1859. It's called the Carrington event. So strong that they saw the Aurora Borealis all the way down in the Caribbean. It was bright enough that it was like a full moon.
Oh, creepy.
But 1859, not very much electronic stuff. Not very much electricity being used at that time. Actually, none, because, you know, medicine hadn't really hit his stride until the end of the 19th century, early 1900s. Mm. So it didn't really affect anything. It was a pretty agricultural, steam, fire, heat-based economy. So turned out okay, but everybody, it was strange enough and powerful enough that people remembered it anyway. If something like that were to hit us today, completely different scenario. We would, depending on how strong it was, we could go anywhere from losing power for a few days to a worldwide blackout that lasted for weeks.
That would fuck with a lot of people's pacemakers, I bet.
That would be absolutely true. It's just like
there's so much stuff we rely on electronically.
Yeah, cars would stop. It would almost be like having an EMP going off in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
If it wasn't that, though, they say that even if it was a minor one, do you remember when Quebec, I believe it was Quebec, had that big blackout for like 4 days? I don't know how long ago, 10 years ago, maybe?
No, I don't remember.
But it went really well. Surprisingly, I mean, other than the fact that it blacked out for like 4 days and they had no power in the winter, a lot of people froze to death. But overall, it wasn't chaos. I mean, people didn't
riot. It went as well as it could have for a blackout during the winter.
But again, it was just a region where there could be help coming in from outside. And still cars worked and all that sort of stuff. It wasn't quite on the level of what we'd be talking about here. But I heard one projection that even if it was one that was strong enough that we lost power on half of the planet for a day or two, it would take 10 years for the human race to recover.
What?
Yeah, from the damage and the...
So knocking out the power for the entire planet for 2 days...
For even half the planet.
Half the planet?
Would take 4 to 10 years to recover. From that. Economically...
Because people would just lose their shit, basically. Right. Like over half the world would just go in...
Right.
2 days of chaos,
just
really?
Think about it. Like, if cell phones stopped working, all police, government,
I just think about
communications
like
all stopped. If all went dark, if it all went dark, it would be like...
I feel like if people just chilled, people could just chill out for 2 days, and we'd be fine.
And then I'm sure in some places that's what would happen. Places like Quebec, maybe, would be the where it would happen.
But then there'd be other places where it'd be just full scale, like, oh...
Yeah, like back home in Wyoming, like if we went without power for 2 days, like people would band together and they wouldn't, because everybody knows everybody, you know.
Right.
But I think that like you get to a Chicago or you get to, I mean, look at Katrina. Yeah. I mean, that place was chaos.
Yeah.
And that was the police, that was street thugs, that was the general populace, that was everybody, you know, and... Yeah, they were out. They were without power for 3 or 4 days there, with the storm. But there would be no help coming. Too
right.
I mean, everywhere would be equally
helpless,
and dark.
Huh. Yeah, I guess you're right. It's just weird to think that 2 days of utter chaos could set us back 10 years.
10 years.
4 to 10, even four.
Yeah,
it's crazy. Why not just chill out, everyone? Just curl up with a candle and a book.
And that's if it's a weak enough one that it doesn't permanently fry the infrastructure. If it's a strong one, it'll permanently fry the infrastructure and will go dark for years.
Well, that's...
And if that happens, it's the Dark Ages. You wish it was the Dark Ages, baby. Fuck. That thing's going to be like... I don't even want to think. But that's today's Black Watch plaid.
Well, I'm not going to sleep tonight, so thanks for that.
I never sleep.
Oh, well, convenient for you.
Convenient for me, yeah.
All right, well, thanks for listening, everyone. This has been episode number 7 of Idiots Discuss the Universe.
Bye-bye.
Idiots Discuss the Universe is recorded in IDTU Studios, located in Portland, Oregon. All opinions and commentary has been carefully researched by the technicians and scholars of IDTU Research Academy, and therefore should be greeted with healthy skepticism and disbelief. No idiots were harmed during the making of this podcast.